got closer to her and slid his hand to her belly. "You took him," Tawny accused. "You took him and made him yours. You two were so close, even if I tried, I couldn't get in. It was like I wasn't even there. Put a roof over your heads, food in your bellies, and both of you acted like I was a piece of furniture. It's odd to know right now that you felt the same way as you made us feel," Greta remarked coolly. "You aren't getting me. You took my life when you took my boy," Tawny stated. "You gave me life, Mom, and it was your responsibility to do everything in your power to make it a good one. You never went hungry. You had clothes on your backs, and where's the thanks for that?" Tawny sneered. "That isn't even half of it," Greta retorted. "If you watched me with Andy like you said you did, you'd know. By then it was too late. You two had each other and I was the outsider in my own home and there was no turning back. How can you know? You didn't even try," Greta pointed out. Tawny's focus became acute. "And if I'd tried, would it have made a difference?" "We'll never know, since you didn't," Greta responded. "You did something entirely different. Do you even have a clue how much pain you've caused?"
"What happened to Andy was an accident," Tawny spat.
"What happened to Andy was an avoidable accident," Greta returned.
"You don't think I live with that every day?" Tawny asked. "You don't think that doesn't eat away at me? You don't think that's why it was tough to get up the nerve to go see him? Because going to see him meant seeing right in front of my face what happened to him?"
"You know, no," Greta told her. "Until right now, the way you've behaved my whole life, Mom, that never occurred to me. But you're standing here talking to me. You're standing here trying to explain to me. We both know what you did to Andy was hideous and tragic. What I want to know is why you felt the need to torture me."
"You could have been something too," Tawny fired at her. "You could have used the looks I gave you, that voice I gave you to go places. You didn't. But you did manage to hook yourself a man who was rolling in it. And what? Every time I came to you for help, you acted like I was a huge pain in your ass. And he was worse. He treated me like a snake in the grass. You ever been treated like that, Greta, you'd know. You'd get it. You'd get pissed about it. So if you think I should feel bad for playing with that asshole, you're wrong. You say your mama didn't give you dick, but I did. You just never paid attention. But I taught you that too, girl. People treat you like shit, you don't let that lie. You treat him like shit right back, and you do it 10 times better."
"I think you might just be crazy," Greta whispered. Tawny studied her daughter a beat before she said, "You don't understand me." "No, I don't," Greta confirmed. "You'll never understand me," Tawny stated. "No, I won't," Greta agreed. "You don't want my present," Tawny went on. "No, I don't," Greta repeated. "Andy won't want his either." "No, he won't. So we know.
We know what I always knew. I'm standing here in front of you trying, and you're throwing it in my face," she kept at Greta.
Greta didn't flinch or hesitate.
"Yes, I am."
Tawny's focus intensified on her daughter's face, and her shoulders straightened before she decreed,
"You also don't understand. I made you what you are. All you are, Greta. From your looks right down to your grit. I gave you all of that, girl.
You're forced through the 7 circles of hell, you get to the other side. You don't turn and thank the 7 circles of hell for making you pull up the fortitude to endure. You take hold of what you earned after you got free and get as far away from them as you can. Unfortunately, my 7 circles live and breathe and can drive a car, so they keep following me.
Well, that'll be done now, Greta," Tawny spat.
"Finally, something from you that I actually want."
Tawny's head jerked, her mane of fake golden curls jerking with it.
Before either of them could say more, Hicks cut in. He did it because it was time. He also did it because Donna's Ram had parked at the curb and she was out, making her way up his walk.
"I think this has run its course," he stated. "Now, Miss Dare, you are about to be served. If you break the protection order you're about to receive, I'll charge you with criminal harassment and I'll talk with our prosecutor to see you serve time. The maximum is 5 years. The good part of that is, it won't matter you only have $322 since your accommodation will be courtesy of the state. The bad part of that is, your accommodation will be courtesy of the state. Donna had arrived while he spoke, and she lifted up the envelope with the order in it that Tawny automatically accepted when he stopped. This protection order lasts 14 days, Hicks continued. The minute it expires, we'll be requesting a permanent one from the judge. I can't speak for him, but he's not been feeling beneficent these days, especially about the fact that people keep fucking with Greta. So my guess is he'll grant it. You can't be within 100 yards of her. If you are, I'll do everything I can to put you in prison. If you harass Andy, we'll get a protection order for him too. And after you're seen at Sunnydown, the photos the judge saw you took of Greta, the effort you clearly put into that, and the statement he read from Greta's ex-husband as to how you used those, I doubt Judge Bearford will deny that request. So my suggestion is, get out of Glossop, get out of McCook, and don't come back. Slowly, Tawny's gaze went from studying the envelope to Hicks. Then it went to Greta. Hicks waited. He felt Greta waiting. Donna didn't know what was happening, but she also waited. He didn't know what he expected. He didn't expect much. The woman was what she was. She was also a mother. So he expected something. Greta probably expected nothing. And that was what she got when Tawny turned to his steps, walked down them, right to her car. She got in, slammed the door, started it up, pulled out into the street, and drove away. She didn't even say goodbye.
Okay, that woman is, well, that woman,
Donna started, after the silence of Tawny's departure stretched long.
But I'm not feeling even a low hum of Christmas spirit on this porch. What did she do now?
She gave me the only thing of value she's ever given me, Greta answered.
Donna looked to his woman.
What's that? She left, Greta answered,
pulled from his hold, walked around and into his house. Hicks looked to the door she closed behind her, and then to his friend.
It wasn't even half as much fun to serve her as I thought it would be,
she quipped worriedly, watching him closely. Thanks for coming out, Donna.
Think you best get in there and look after your woman, Hickson,
she replied quietly. He nodded. She turned to leave. He went into his house. Greta was standing in the doorway to the kitchen, pulling the strap of her purse over her shoulder.
I have my coat on. Might as well go get Andy, she announced. If we missed anything, I'll go get it. Andy likes going to this store.
Just a minute, he replied, moved to her and got in her space, putting his hands to either side of her neck and bowing his head so he could set his face in hers. You okay?
Yep.
That was rough, he noted.
No, it wasn't. It's just her.
Carefully, he reminded her. Can't believe it. We never talked about it. But it's clear that's the first time she spoke to you about your dad.
I don't have a dad, Hickson. Just a swimming bunch of cells that came out of some random guy I never met and never want to meet. It isn't a loss, darling. Honestly, you can't lose something you've never had.
Babe.
It's done. To rejoice would give her time and emotion, which she doesn't deserve. To be sad or angry would be the same. She clearly kept the trump of knowledge of our father's close at hand, ready to use when she needed it. But that backfired, because they gave us less than even she did, which is saying something. They gave up on us so easily. It's clearly no loss.
Her shoulders shrugged.
And now it's over. I suppose when you finally swat the annoying fly that's been bugging you for hours, you take a moment to feel the satisfaction of it being gone. Then you get on with shit. I'm getting on with shit. It's Christmas Eve's Eve. I'm going to go get my baby brother.
I'll come with you, he said gently. She made a pull to move from his hold, but he pressed his thumbs under her jaw, and she halted. I love you, he told her.
I love you too, and I love my brother. And we got it down to a tag team art to make hella good homemade pizza. So get a move on, Smokey.
He examined her face and saw she'd gotten over it
after what her mother did to her ex. She wasn't in a place where Tawny Dare could harm her anymore. The fact that Tawny Dare wouldn't be physically in a location she could try to harm her was irrelevant. Greta had made it through the seventh circle, and now she was free. "We have another Christmas surprise, Sugar," he reminded her. Her expression turned curious.
"We do?"
Andy's bedroom. She melted into him, her arms finally going around him.
"He knows you're setting that up for him, Hickson."
"He knows, but it's now set up and he hasn't seen it yet." She grinned and gave him a squeeze.
"You're right. We do have a surprise.
Because he's gonna love the comforter Mamie and Corinne chose for him."
That surprised Hicks, because Andy might have a TBI, but he was still very much a guy. "He will?"
"He won't care even a little bit.
Until we tell him Mamie and Corinne picked it.
Then he'll make a big deal out of loving it."
That, Hicks had learned, was undoubtedly true. Hicks had no idea about Greta and Andy's fathers. He knew too much about their mother. So he figured it was down to that grit Tawny Dare mentioned that Greta had that made her brother fall not far from his sister's tree. He dug his fingers into her neck gently and said, "Let's go get your brother."
She blinded him with a smile and replied,
"Yeah, let's go get Andy."
He kissed her. He walked her out to his Bronco. And even if she didn't want to rejoice, that bitch was gone. So he did. Thus, as a celebration, for the first time in his life with his ass in his bronc, he let someone else drive her. And he was in no doubt Greta was the one. But how much she loved driving his baby proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt.
"I was close."
He mumbled, sliding a hand over the curve of her ass. The scary thing was she had been close to winning. Then again, he'd been dazzled by his Boxing Day present. A skin-tight, red-lace teddy with fluffy, white feather trim at hips and chest, little straps over the shoulders, crisscross ribbons between her tits, and even a thin, red velvet belt with a tiny rhinestone buckle. Watching her walk into his bedroom wearing that, he hadn't even paid attention when she tossed a tube of lube on the bed. His attention didn't come back, seeing as she tossed it, then crawled to him in that getup, with her tits almost hanging out, and he had to devote his attention to all of that. So she'd laid down the gauntlet for their rematch, immediately got the upper hand, and it took a while for her to lose it. This was why they were both covered in a sheen of sweat, on their stomachs, flat out across his bed, and he just slid out of her ass, after making her come taking it, then coming himself, really fucking hard giving it. She was hot up there, unbelievably tight, and she'd gone wild with his hands on her, his mouth on her, drilling her into the bed with his cock up her ass. It was Hicks's best Christmas present ever, bar none. Starting with the teddy, he slid two fingers through her crevice and held her there, murmuring, "You good?" She turned her head on her arms, her mass of curls shifting with it, and gave him her big blue eyes.
"You up for a bath?"
He grinned at the look on her face that gave him his answer as well as her question. "Yep." She grinned back, and he slid his hand up and over, smoothing it on her hip. "After a recovery bath, loser gives winner a colossal blowjob," he informed her. She frowned, even if her eyes flared.
"That wasn't the deal."
"Winner gets to say the deal after he wins." She started pouting.
"You're a terrible sport, Hicks."
"How's that?"
"It's not how you lose that tells the tale. It's the class you show when you win," she educated him.
He leaned in and kissed her shoulder, saying there, "Maybe you can show me that if you win someday."
"It's good I love you,"
she groused. He lifted his lips from her shoulder, looked her dead in the eye, and there was no teasing in his voice when he said, "I know." The peak went out of her face, and her eyes got bright.
"Don't make me cry."
He shifted, so he could pull her slightly under his body, but keep his place on his stomach and put his face in hers. I'll never make you cry, he vowed.
Happy tears,
she told him. Never, he whispered, moved in, and touched his mouth to hers. Hers opened, so he took the touch into a full-blown kiss. When he pulled away, she didn't look like she was going to cry anymore. There, all better.
Did you like your present, baby?
She whispered. Are you in doubt, baby? He whispered back.
No.
He touched his nose to hers and held her gaze. Hated hearing you never had a dream, sweetheart, he shared gently. She tightened.
Hicks, don't bring her.
But I figure, he cut her off. When you're a walking, talking, singing dream come true, you don't get it the other way around. Her eyes got bright again.
Shit, totally gonna cry.
He grinned again and moved his hand to cup her ass and give it a squeeze. None of that.
Boss,
she muttered, pulling it together. I'll run the bath, he murmured in return.
I'll lounge here and let you run the bath.
He pulled back an inch, thinking how hard she'd come. Don't fall asleep, he ordered. Her brows shot together in insult.
Would I fall asleep?
Not with the promise of sucking me off on our agenda.
You like that more than me, Hickson.
Considering you'll be sitting on my face doing it, I'm not sure that's true. That got him another eye flare.
Bath,
she ordered. Boss, he muttered, kissed her nose, and moved out of the bed. He ran their bath. He made it nice and hot. Then he walked out and smiled to himself when Greta let out a surprised scream as he grabbed her ankle, dragged her off the bed, and threw her over his shoulder. You fell asleep, he accused, his woman's ass in the air, her body draped over his shoulder, walking to the bathroom.
Whatever,
she replied to his back. They entered the bathroom, with Hicks still smiling.
Epilogue. I win. Greta.
Babe.
Coming, I shouted, sitting on the side of my bed, slipping up the zip on my boot. I dashed into the closet, grabbed a black pashmina, my black leather gloves, then I dashed out through the room and down the stairs. I found Hicks in the kitchen, fridge open, bent with his face in it, wearing a dark gray suit, his overcoat thrown on my kitchen island. Hey, I greeted. He straightened as he closed the fridge door and turned to me. Dark green shirt, green and gray patterned tie. Handsome. I walked to him, asking, Are you hungry? He looked to the fridge, then back to me, putting his hands to my waist when I arrived at him.
Habit,
he muttered. Ah, I replied. He studied my face.
You okay?
He asked gently. I didn't know the man, Hicks. I reminded him, resting my hands, still holding my scarf and gloves to his chest.
I know, but you know his wife, and all funerals are rough. This one.
He didn't finish that, but I got him. 3 nights before, Mrs. Whitney's husband had slid into the eternal sleep that was far more eternal than the eternal sleep he was in already. It was odd to think of the death of someone as a relief. However, Mr. Whitney had died long ago. So as odd as it was still true, which made it difficult in a different way, because even if that might be logical to have that feeling, it still didn't seem right. I'll feel better when I see her and how she's handling it, I told him. We spoke on the phone, but she sounded understandably preoccupied. It'll be good to get a handle on where she's at. He nodded. I gave him a small smile and started to move out of his hold, but stopped when his fingers tightened.
We got a few minutes, and after this goes down, I gotta get changed and back to work, so... Need to tell you something now,
he shared. I nodded, and it was my turn to study him. It was mid-February, but something had been bothering Hickson, and that something started bothering him right after Christmas. It became more pronounced around January 14th, Corinne's birthday, her sweet 16. I got the idea that a father had issues with his daughter becoming more of a woman, especially since that daughter now had a boyfriend. I also understood that this being the first event where the families had to officially merge, Andy, Lou, her brood, and me going to the party because Corinne wanted us there, a party that had Hope and all her brood there, that this would cause everyone, especially Hicks, some unease. I couldn't say it had gone great. Hope, Lou, Jesse, Molly, and I hadn't stood in a corner and cackled like the sisterhood we were. I couldn't say it was a bust. I'd been nice, but distant, as Hope made it clear she wished me to be, even though she too had been nice, but distant. And Molly had clearly gotten Reed's head out of his ass about things, so he'd been civil. It was still awkward, but it didn't appear Corinne felt it at all. I thought once that occasion was done, Hicks would relax. He hadn't. February 3rd had rolled around, Shaw's 18th. We'd just say it was a 1-2-3 punch with the Drakes. Christmas, Corinne's birthday, then Shaw's. Fortunately, Mamie's birthday was June 3rd, so there was a breather. Again, it was a momentous occasion, his son officially becoming, for all intents and purposes, a man. Hicks showed pride, affection, and obvious emotion at that birthday party that at Shaw's request had been split. His dad, Andy, his sisters and me for dinner, his mom and her family for a big weekend do, with Shaw and the girls going to Hope's house for a few hours before we had dinner and cake at Hicks's in order to share some time with his mom on his big day. But 2 weeks had passed since then, and Hicks's manner hadn't changed. And it was beginning to dawn on me that it was Corinne becoming a woman, with the unavoidable threat of Mamie not being too far behind. She'd started her period, another hit for Hicks that he couldn't ignore that his kids were growing up. However, it was mostly Shaw. It wasn't about him being officially a man. It was about him intending to be the man he intended to be, and that being official. Shaw had an appointment to go to the Marine recruiting office with Hicks in a couple of weeks, and that was where it was at. Every day that passed was a day closer to him losing his boy to the Marines, and the Marines taking over the process of making Shaw into the man he'd become. I had no idea how to make things better for Hicks, and in racking my brain, it was becoming apparent that there was no way to make things better. He had to ride this out. It was inevitable. He had to see it through, support his son. In the meantime, I just had to be there for him, keep a finger on his pulse, and do what I could to see Hicks through. So this could be anything. Hicks didn't hide the fact he was aware his kids were getting older and going about their own lives, and he wanted them to do that responsibly. But he also wanted them to know they'd always be his kids and he'd be there for them. Alternately, he did hide, from all of them but me, though he didn't tell me outright, that he was struggling with it. I wanted him to open up to me. I also didn't want to open up a dialogue about it with him if he was dealing, or he just didn't want to talk about it yet. Hicks was communicative. He shared. You didn't have to guess about stuff with Hicks. If it meant something to him, you knew. But if he wasn't ready to talk, you waited.
Owners of my house got in touch with my real estate agent, he announced.
That I wasn't expecting. Yeah? I prompted, when that was all he said.
Their son got a transfer. He's moving from Virginia to Florida. They have a kid, the wife is pregnant again. They'll be living about an hour away.
I arched into him, getting excited. Really? He grinned down at me.
They're asking for an offer.
They haven't even experienced a full Florida summer yet with its attendant humidity. I pointed out, some of my excitement melting away.
That's not my concern, babe. They have experienced most of Florida winter, and I'm thinking they dig it. I'm thinking they dig more the idea of close proximity with their son and his growing family. So I'd guess they'll learn to put up with humidity. But if they're ready to let go of the house, I'm jumping on that.
Totally. I agreed.
And I want you there.
Of course. That house is perfect for you. Close to work, close to Hope for the kids, lots of space for everybody. Why would I not?
No, babe.
His hands slid from my waist to the small of my back, pulling me closer to him.
I want you there. We come to terms. I buy that house. I want you to move in with us.
I stared up at him. He wasn't done speaking.
And Greta, I want you to think on it. It's your choice, but when you do that, I want you selling this place. We'll talk about furniture because I prefer your dining room table to mine. You got some other great stuff that'd fit. But the rest you can let go and invest all the money you make on it so you can breathe easy about Andy permanently.
Throughout this, I didn't stop staring at him. However, it didn't matter. Hicks still wasn't finished.
And I'll state plain, I got more than the obvious reasons for asking you to think about that. But I'll point out the obvious just to make sure you know. I love you. I'm sure about how I feel about having a future with you. And by that, I mean I'm sure I want a future with you. And this two-house stuff is getting old. I like this place. The kids do. But I want you in my bed every night. And I don't want you to have to lug your crock pot or griddle or whatever over every time you're cooking up something that you need them. Most important, it's time we got serious about this. It's time to take that next step, because that step's gonna lead to the next one, and I wanna move on through all of them with you. But the reason that might not be obvious I want you to let go of this place is your ex gave you this house, and I'm down with him providing for Andy because of who he is to your brother. But where we're at, you're mine, so I'm not down with him providing for you.
Hicks, I forced out, having to force it because I was dealing with all he'd said, all it made me feel, how awesome all that was, but I got no further.
That's where I'm at. You'll call it alpha male behavior, and I'm okay with that. It is. And that's who I am. You need to know how I feel, and I gotta share that honesty. That said, if you think on it, and you love this place, and you want to open up the possibility of me and my kids moving here, we'll talk. I'll listen, sweetheart, I swear it. You love your porch, your street. You want it. I'll see if I have it in me to give it to you. But to do that, I might have to let go of my place so the owners can sell it. And I still want us taking the next step, wherever that step will lead us.
When I had my shot, I responded immediately. You buy your place, I'll sell this place, Hicks. His chin jerked into his throat.
Really?
Really. His brows drew together.
That easy?
He asked. Your street is the same as my street in all the ways that are important. And I love this house, but your kitchen is bigger. It's nicer. And the kids are settled in.
Your bathrooms are nicer.
Your bathrooms aren't awful, but you can gut a bathroom and make it pretty. We have room to put Mamie's bar in my basement, but the floors in yours are wood, so she can dance there, and mine are carpeted. There also isn't a bedroom down there for Shaw or a man cave for you. I pressed my scarf and gloves into his chest and grinned up at him. And if it bothers the alpha, I don't want to prod that beast. His eyes warmed, his face going soft.
You want to stay here, baby? Honest, you make that case. I'll find a way to be cool with it.
God, but I loved him. I failed to mention your mudroom and attached garage, I noted.
Babe.
It's a house, I whispered. And yes, it's the house that Keith bought me. And after what happened, where he is, how he's made it clear he's not going to go back on what he said and find some way to make things all right between us again. For us, or for us to share our love for Andy, I'm where you're at in a way. It's a reminder of that, and that isn't a pleasant reminder. But more, if it bugs you, I can't have that. So it's a house, Hickson. I pressed even closer and lowered my voice so he'd understand how much I meant what I said next. I'm all in for taking the next step. I'm also all in doing that, leaving behind what needs to be left behind so we can move forward through the rest of them. I transferred my gloves to my scarf hand, slid my free hand up to the knot in his tie, and unnecessarily straightened it before I finished. Put in an offer, honey. We'll tell the kids. You guys make a deal. You close. I'll put my place on the market. When it sells, I'll move in. That gives the kids time to come to terms with it happening, and us time to deal with merging houses. Is that a plan? He took an arm from around me to put his hand on my jaw and sweep his thumb across the apple of my cheek. He didn't confirm we had a plan. He still did. He managed this by saying,
"Love you, Gumdrop."
"Love you too, Snugglebug." He grinned down at me. Then he bent and kissed me. When he lifted his head, the warmth was still in his eyes, but it was tempered, and I'd know why when he murmured,
"We best get to Mrs. Whitney."
I nodded. Hicks let me go. He put on his coat while I draped my pashmina around my neck. He went to get my coat and helped me on with it. I pulled my gloves on as we walked out to the Bronco. And then Hicks drove me to Mr. Whitney's funeral so we could support Mrs. Whitney in her even more difficult effort to leave behind what needed to be left behind so she could take her next step. I was sitting next to Lou, watching Snow and Corinne play soccer, at the same time glancing frequently to the side, where Hicks was standing having what appeared to be a serious conversation with Shaw. Most high schools played soccer in the fall, but with most of the girls on the volleyball team also playing soccer, not softball, in a decision that divided the county and caused rifts between family and friends that were still healing to that day, Lou had reported that 5 years ago, they'd shifted seasons, so all the girls' soccer and or volleyball teams weren't terrible. God, I loved a small town where the only thing that could upset you was the high school girls' soccer schedule. "You know what that's about," Lou said under her breath as she leaned into me. "Wendy broke it off with Shaw," I said under my breath back. Lou's voice rose. "Is she crazy?" "Shh, Lou," I hissed, slapping her on the leg. "Is she crazy?" Lou whispered. "Her dad's treatments are over. Things look promising, but that was harrowing. She's a junior. She's looking at going to University of Nebraska in a year. What she's not looking forward to is having to go through that with her dad, then having to deal with her boyfriend being wherever he's gonna be, becoming a Marine, thus not free to come visit her on weekends and the like. So she pushed the option of Shaw giving that up and going to work for his granddad so he can be close. He signed on. That didn't go over great with her. There's no turning back now, but she didn't stop pushing. He wasn't liking that much." "Oh, boy," Lou muttered. "A couple of days ago, she gave him an ultimatum. He made his choice. She ended it," I concluded. "Oh, boy," Lou sighed. "He's tried to get her to understand. She's digging in her heels." I glanced at father and son. It appears she's still digging in her heels. "Some stay, some go. So many go, the pool gets less populated. So I'll pull out my crystal ball to confirm when I get home. But right now, I can say with some authority in a year or three or five or for the rest of her life, Hickson and you hang around Glossop, Shaw comes home to see you guys, and Wendy stays here, she'll see him and she'll be kicking her own ass. Especially after he lands a babe who's smart enough not to give a man an ultimatum about something like that." I mumbled my agreement. The conversation ended, and both father and son walked up to sit with Lou and me. Hicks gave me a look and a short shake of his head. I returned his look, but gave a smile to Shaw. He gave one back, but it was one he didn't commit to. They sat. Hicks curved an arm around me. We watched Corinne and Snow help the team beat the crap out of Yucca. We then went home. Shaw was barely in the back door when he muttered,
"I'm gonna go out to Sunnydown and hang with Andy."
Mamie had spent the game dancing under the bleachers with her friends. She'd already danced into the house. Corinne gave her brother a look, me a look, her dad a look, but kept quiet and moved into the house. Hicks murmured,
"That's cool, kid. Call when you're on your way back."
I stood there, allowing the glow of how much Shaw liked my brother to warm me. Then I followed him out to the garage. "Hey," I called. Standing at the door to get outside to his car parked in the drive, Shaw turned to me. I got close. "She's not the one." His mouth got tight.
"I know, we're young, it's not the end of the world."
He looked away, mumbling,
"Whatever."
"It's not that you're young," I stated, and he looked back to me. "And it might not be the end of the world, but that doesn't negate the fact that it feels like it right now. It's that she's not the one. I had his attention, and since he didn't say anything or cut the conversation off, I got closer and brushed my fingers along the back of his hand. She either believes in you and your dreams or she doesn't. If she doesn't, Shaw, honey, she's not the one. She can be 17 or she can be 35. The woman you pick has to understand what you want out of life, and she has to support that 100%. It's your job to give that back. What is not your job is to settle for anything less. You don't make a man what he's not. You find the man you want and stand beside him no matter what.
Yeah,
he whispered. Yeah, I decreed.
I liked her a lot,
he confided in me. I know that, sweetheart.
But you're right. What you said, she's not the one.
I gave him a gentle smile. You'll find her, Shaw. He stared at me, and he did it hard. Then he said,
yeah.
I liked how he said that, and what he didn't hide he meant by it, so my smile got less gentle and a lot bigger. Go see Andy, I ordered.
Should I take him candy bars?
He asked. If you want, do you need money? I asked back. He shook his head.
I got it.
All right. Be safe, yes?
I will, Greta. Later.
Later, Shaw. He walked out the door. I walked in the one that led to the mudroom, only to see my man leaning a shoulder against the jamb of the doorway to the hall, with his arms and ankles crossed, waiting for my return. Seriously, my man was hot.
You sort him out?
He asked. And seriously, my man was a good dad. I gave him a few things to think about.
Good,
he murmured, then asked,
you gonna make dinner or am I taking my girls out to eat?
Mimi's on a cooking binge. When she's not pirouetting, she's all about spices. I promised to demonstrate the art of making tacos tonight. This art including not worrying about spices too much since McCormick does it for you. She's looking forward to it.
Tacos sound good.
He said that, but he didn't move. You gonna get out of my way so I can get your girl and convene my lesson at the Drake Culinary School? I asked. He lifted one shoulder.
Sure, you earn passage with a kiss.
I could totally do that. So I did it. Then I taught Mamie how to make tacos. And at the dining room table we were selling when I closed on my house in 2 weeks, Hicks's girls with Hicks ate them. I walked into our bedroom. Hicks sitting on the edge of the bed, elbows to his knees, one hand clamped on the back of his neck, didn't move. This was not a pose that alarmed me. Shaw had graduated 3 hours before. My heart lurched. I closed the door, went and sat next to my man. I pressed up against his side, wrapping my arm around his back and resting my forehead to his shoulder. He cleared his throat, but didn't lift his head when he said gruffly,
kid's smarter than me and I'm a 42-year-old man.
I wasn't sure that was true, but I didn't disagree verbally. I just hummed,
he'll be okay.
I agreed with that. He will.
He'll do good.
Yes, he will.
Find a good woman, build a good life.
Yes.
Hear him crying.
That confused me. Shaw was out partying with his friends. He was amped. Hicks had hidden all of this as best he could. Hope had done her part with that too, so it was all good for Shaw. What? He lifted up, turned to me, and I saw the red rimming his eyes. Oh, my Hicks.
Came out bawling. Didn't even have to induce it. He let it be known he was a part of this world the minute he slipped out. Keep hearing that. Hearing the memory of that moment my boy became mine.
I pressed closer to him and rounded him with both arms.
What happened to my baby boy?
He whispered. I'd barely got my arms around him, but at that, I put both hands to his cheeks and my face in his. He grew up, Ixon, I whispered back. And you did good, baby. You and Hope did so good with him. He's amazing. Simply amazing. He sniffed and sat straight. My hands fell away.
Andy's a mess,
he declared. I nodded. It was far from lost on Andy that his new best friend was soon to enter the Marines. He loved Hicks. He adored Mamie and Corinne. But he'd bonded with Shaw. I know. I'll go to him in a second, see if he's okay. Just wanted to make sure you're okay.
He goes to basic in 3 weeks.
Yes, I said.
We're gonna make that a great fucking 3 weeks.
I smiled weakly at him. He took my hand and stood, pulling me up with him. He let me go instantly, and I let him do it when he stated toward the door.
I'll go to Andy.
Okay, darling. He looked down at me. Love you, I whispered. He bent and touched his lips to mine. Then, while Shaw partied with his friends, the girls were with their mom looking after her, my man went to my brother so they could commiserate about the upcoming loss of their boy. At the Dew, I slid on the bar stool next to Hicks, murmuring, "Thanks, baby," as he handed me my sparkling water. It was packed that night, but Hicks had arrived early, bringing me in to sing. There had been tables available. Why he was at the bar, I had no clue. Before I could ask, he said,
"It's totally corny."
I took a sip from my straw, but did it with my eyes to him. When I finished, I asked, "What?"
"Wanted to do it before, but wanted things to be about Shaw during his graduation and before he left. I struggled with it. He'll be upset he wasn't around when it happened, but it'll get his ass home when he can come home so we can have a delayed celebration."
I stared at him as he spoke, not having any idea what he was talking about. "I'm not following, darling," I shared.
"Met you here. Started the ride when you sang At Last to me. Tried to deny it when you sang Stay to me. Knew I was gone when you sang Cold to me. And knew you were gone when you sang Glitter in the Air to me. So it had to be here. And here is where it's gonna be."
I was kind of following, but not exactly. And I couldn't find it in me to figure it out, because I was dealing with him sharing he remembered all the important songs I'd sang to him. His eyes dropped to my drink, but all he said was,
"Corny."
I felt my brows draw together, then I looked down to my drink. Sparkling water, ice glittering, blue straw with those ridges that you could bend so... Oh my God. My hands started shaking. Oh my God. I felt Hicks's hand span the top of my thigh, his lips to my ear where he whispered,
"Time for the next step, Greta."
I turned my head. He pulled back and I caught his eyes. "Is that..." I started.
"Marry me."
Tears filled my eyes and he saw them instantly. So just as instantly, he lifted both hands to my face and put his in mine.
"Baby, no tears."
"No. No damned way. I'm not crying right now, Hicks and Drake." His thumbs went under my eyes and he warned,
"Sweetheart, no."
Too late. One slid over and hit his thumb. His gaze came to mine. "I love you," I whispered. His eyes flashed with humor.
"Does that mean yes?"
"Do you have to ask?" I retorted.
"Kinda important for this question I get an answer, Gumdrop."
"Then yes." No humor for that. Just intensity. He also didn't move. "Yes, Hickson." I lifted my free hand and wrapped it tight around his wrist. "Yes, yes, 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 yes," I stated fiercely. I said it, but Hicks still didn't move. He just sat there, holding my face, his pool blue eyes staring into mine. I was going to get to swim in those eyes forever. Another tear slid into his thumb.
"Glass, bro, put that bling on her finger before she combusts,"
we heard from beside us, and I looked to Danny, the bartender, who'd set an empty glass on the bar between Hicks and me. He was also grinning like a maniac. Hicks took my glass, poured out the water, but sifted it through his fingers in the end so he could catch the ring. Danny threw a bunch of napkins on the bar for Hicks to dry his hand, but Hicks didn't touch them. He took my hand and slid the cold metal of the ring on my finger. It was very simple. Not large, not tiny, set in white gold or platinum, and it had 5 little diamonds embedded in each side of the band. Keith had given me a 2.5-carat cushion-cut diamond surrounded by a band embedded with 2 rows of them. This was not that. What it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. I felt another tear fall.
Baby,
Hicks warned, his hand closing around mine, taking the view of my ring from me, his other hand sweeping away the tear.
Stop it.
I looked to him. You're right. It was corny. He grinned. Totally corny, I declared. He kept grinning. And I'm so happy. If you don't kiss me, I'm gonna scream, I shared. He continued grinning even as he stood from his stool, got in my space in a way I had to twist my legs to the side, and wrapped a hand around the back of my neck. I tilted my head way back, curving my arms around his middle, and it was then he kissed me. I heard the tinkling of something against a glass, but I was so lost in Hickson, I didn't take it in. I still didn't take it in when I heard Gemini shout,
"She said yes! Raise a glass! We're toasting to the soon-to-be Mr. and Mrs. Hickson Drake."
I only surfaced when Hicks lifted his mouth from mine, and I suspected he only did this because everyone was cheering and shouting. We looked to the club to see everyone on their feet, everyone looking our way, everyone clapping and everyone smiling. Hicks slid an arm around my shoulders and tucked me into his side.
"Danny, champagne for all,"
Gemini announced. More clapping and cheering, and I settled my wet gaze on Gemini. He moved to us, smiling even bigger than Danny had been doing. Hicks lifted his hand to shake Gemini's and accept his murmured congratulations. Then Gemini moved in and touched his cheek to mine. He moved back and caught my gaze.
"Happy for you, beautiful."
"Me too." He gave me a soft smile.
"You need the rest of the night off."
I shook my head. If you don't think I'm gonna give the performance of a lifetime crooning to my new fiancé, you're crazy. That got me a bigger smile. He moved away and clapped Hicks on the arm before he walked away. I looked up to my man. No, my fiancé, my future husband. No, just my future everything. I should have taken the rest of the night off. He dipped close to me.
"You want that, Greta. Have a feeling Gemini would give you anything."
"Do you want me to grab him?" I asked.
"I want you to do what you want."
"Okay, but what do you want?"
"I want what you want."
I looked into his eyes, and doing it, I knew that was what he wanted. That was all Hickson Drake actually was. He was a man who wanted what those he loved wanted. After the life I'd lived, how had I gotten so lucky? I lifted my hand, pressed it against his shoulder, watching myself do that, seeing my new ring wink at me. Then I slid it to his neck and curled it around, looking back at him. "I want to sing at last to you, and stay, and cold, and glitter in the air. And then I'll cut the set short because I want to go home and make love with my fiancé. Does that work for you?"
"Absolutely."
I tipped my head back and swayed closer to him. "You've made me very happy, Hickson Drake."
"That makes me happy, Greta. But just to say, sweetheart, even before that, you returned the favor."
He touched his nose to mine and finished.
"In spades."
"No," I replied and saw his eyes smile.
Baby, I'd know."
"No, you wouldn't. Because you didn't grow up like me. You didn't live a life like mine. You got kicked in the teeth at 42, then you found me. So this match, Smokey, no doubt about it, I win." Both his hands cupped my jaws before he growled,
"I'll give you that win, Angel."
I smiled at him. He kissed me. People around us started whooping and cheering again. And for the first time in my life, with not one thing dragging on it, weighing it heavy, I was happy. Oh, I'd won. Yeah. I'd won. Spectacularly. Mrs. Swanson was in my chair, and I was sectioning a piece of her hair to put a roller in, doing this wearing a She Told Me So t-shirt with an arrow pointed in a way that, where I usually stood by my chair, always pointed to Lou. Lou had given it to me in the back room the day before. I'd laughed my butt off. This being after we'd hugged for a long time, because my bestest bud had given it to me, and then promptly burst out crying. Needless to say, Lou was happy that Hicks asked me to marry him. Lou had told me the shirt was a joke, I didn't have to wear it. I totally wore it. I looked up from Mrs. Swanson's hair to see Joyce standing close to me. "Told you," she said softly. "That man never struck me as stupid. He knew the good that dropped in his lap, he'd be fool to let it go. He knew, Greta." "Yeah," I whispered, staring in her eyes. "I cannot say how happy I am," she shared with me, still talking quietly. "Don't know if I'm happier for Hickson, he got a good girl like you, or you, that you got what you deserved. But I'm happy. Whole town's happy, darling. Watching you two find each other through all that garbage was like watching a dream come true." "You're gonna make me cry, Joyce," I warned. "None of that." She dismissed, stared at me some more, then nodded her head sharply. "Right," she stated briskly. "I'm off. 6 weeks, Lou?" Lou had to clear her throat before she replied, "You're in my schedule, Joyce." Joyce said nothing. She just took off. I looked to Lou. She grinned at me. Mrs. Swanson sniffled before she asked, "Greta, sweetie, I forgot my hanky. You got a tissue?" I looked at her in the mirror to see she had tears brimming in her eyes. I gave her a gentle smile and went for the tissue box. "Right here, Mrs. Swanson." "Here, a dear," she murmured, taking the tissue I offered. I sectioned more hair, thinking how odd it was, a girl who didn't dream, living a dream come true. Then I rolled Mrs. Swanson's hair and tried to do it well, even if my engagement ring kept taking my attention.
"I cannot be freaking believe this day," Hicks groused as we walked into the mudroom from the garage. I tried not to burst out laughing. Instead, I murmured, "Hey, boy, how's your day been, boy?" to Rocky, Andy and the girl's dog that we rescued from the shelter, a mature pup, 8 years old when we got him last summer, part lab, part they didn't know what. A dog we said was Andy and the girl's, but he was Hicks and mine, and not only because we were the ones around the most to take care of him.
"And I cannot freaking tell you how much I need bourbon," he went on.
I could imagine. I still found it funny. I let Hicks help me off with my coat. He took it and hooked it on the hooks by the door before he shrugged off his own. I wandered into the kitchen to get him his bourbon, with Rocky doing what Rocky did whenever Hicks and I separated. He stood there uncertain whether to hang with one or follow the other. I'd thrown my beaded clutch on the island and was in the process of walking to the cupboard where we kept the liquor when Hicks and Rocky joined me. "Porch?" I asked, raising a brow at him.
"Gin?"
he asked back, glaring at me. I kept trying not to laugh. "For me, it's not a gin night, darling. I didn't deliver a baby on a dance floor. It's a wine night, though." He went to the wine rack in the pantry and decreed,
"Donna's fired on Monday."
I barely suppressed my giggle.
"Greta, this shit isn't funny."
I pulled down his bottle of bourbon and looked to him.
"Ashley gave birth on the dance floor during the reception at Betts's wedding."
He told me something I knew. My body jolted as I chased the laughter back into it, which wanted so desperately to bust out of it. He recounted the whole thing.
"Hal lost his mind. Donna couldn't stop laughing long enough to help, and I think Larry went somewhere and puked."
I couldn't help it. I started sniggering.
"I've never seen a baby come that fast," he declared.
"She told me earlier she was feeling strange. I think she was in labor," I shared.
"That's insane."
I shrugged, smiling hugely at him.
"What woman dances while she's in labor?"
he asked me irritably. Well, obviously Ashley, I answered. His eyes narrowed.
You didn't help either.
I was busy holding her hand, I pointed out.
Thank God for Andy, or I think Hal would have passed out,
he muttered, turning back to the pantry. I smiled, turning back to his bourbon, and I finished with it, thinking he was right. Hal had descended into panic, and Andy had jumped right in and calmed him right down. I waited until he opened a bottle and poured my wine. He handed it to me, murmuring,
Go on out. I'll get your sweater and be out in a minute.
I nodded. Thanks, baby. Rocky and I went out with my wine and Hicks's bourbon. Rocky was never uncertain about porch time. He always came right out with me. I settled myself in an Adirondack chair, and Rocky explored the front yard long enough to do his business before he came back and laid down on my high-heeled feet. Hicks joined me, carrying my sweater, but he'd changed into jeans and a thermal, which I thought was a good call, considering his trousers, shirt, and tie had newborn baby all over them. I pulled on the cardigan as Hicks sat down beside me, tipping up his chin toward the street, at the same time Rocky's head came up and also turned toward the street. I shifted my attention that way and called, Hey, Nikki.
Hey there, Greta. Hicks?
Rocky woofed softly. Nikki's dog strained at the leash to get to Rocky. Hicks said nothing, but he adjusted his scowl long enough for Nikki to pass with her dog.
You know, since you're in a bad mood, I began.
Hicks's scowl returned full force as he turned his eyes to me. I beat back my smile.
Corinne and I chatted at the wedding. She's broken up with Jake.
Hicks looked back at the street.
Good. That kid's a tool. Never liked him.
Since the boyfriend she got her sophomore year, and with Corinne now into her senior one, she'd been through three, Jake being four. Hicks never liked any of them.
Okay, well, that wasn't bad as such. But, Donna shared a little bit about Becker talking to the feds about a deal.
He threw back some bourbon, then declared to the street,
Woman's totally fired on Monday.
Hicks, he looked to me.
She shouldn't be talking to you about that stuff, Greta.
She didn't say much, but she's worried because you've been moody.
And again, I'm moody at work. She doesn't talk to my wife about it.
I'm her stylist, darling. Except for talking about stuff with you, it's very close to the sanctity of the confessional, even if she's not in my chair, but instead at a wedding where a woman gave birth on a dance floor.
Babe, you rat out people all the time, which, I'll note, you just did share in that shit Donna gave to you.
I grinned. If they share with the sheriff's wife, they deserve me being a snitch.
Hicks didn't grin. He looked back to the street, but at least he did it with his mouth quirking.
Are you okay with this Becker stuff?
I asked.
Him making a deal, ratting on bigger players in order to get his ass in WITSEC after we finally shut down his shit in this county? No. Do I want that house of cards to collapse? Yes. Do I want Becker to live cush after he's gotten away with his crap for decades? No.
He took another sip and muttered,
But I got no choice. It's out of my hands.
I reached out and wrapped my fingers around his forearm. Sorry, baby. He pulled out of my hold, but only to take over, placing the back of my hand on the arm of the chair, and then running his fingers along the insides of mine. He did it automatically. His eyes were still aimed at the street, but he did it having so much practice, he didn't have to watch to do it expertly.
I'm glad Hal finally got his head out of his ass,
he whispered eventually. I was in the know about the fact that Hal had not been a very good husband, until for some reason, things broke loose after Hicks gave him a talking to during the investigation of Nat Calloway's murder. Or maybe it had just been Nat dying, leaving Faith to face a life without her husband. Whatever it was, he'd gotten rid of his women and recommitted to his marriage. Now they had a baby. And when Ashley came and got her hair done, she didn't look sad anymore.
Me too, I whispered back.
Hope called,
he shared. Yeah? I asked.
Jep and Marie want us at Thanksgiving. Andy's invited too, of course. Your call, sweetheart. It's a big day and important to you and Andy, just like it is to everybody.
I felt his eyes, so I stopped looking at our hands and looked to him.
I know you and Hope managed to keep it good. I also know you two aren't the best of friends, so if you'll be uncomfortable, we'll say no.
Shaw'll be home, and it'd be good we don't make him split too much of his time. So maybe we can meet them there for pie at the end, but maybe go over to Lou's or have Tommy and Toast over here and do our own thing before we go.
That'll work.
I smiled at him. He stopped stroking my fingers, threaded his through mine, and held on.
Sheriff,
I heard and looked to the street.
Hey, Greta. Nice night.
Years getting old. We need to enjoy them while they last, Joe, I called.
I hear that,
our neighbor replied, nodding to us both and continuing to walk his dog. I sipped my wine. My husband held my hand and sipped his bourbon. We let the peace of our street melt away the craziness of the day.
I want more bourbon. I'll get you more wine. I do that, you get upstairs. I'll bring up the drinks, but I want to fuck my wife.
My lady part spasmed, and my gaze shot to Hicks to watch him down the rest of his drink. When his gaze came to mine, I didn't hesitate offering him my still half-full glass. He didn't take it. He pulled me up, and then he pulled me into the house. Rocky followed. Our dog and I stopped with Hicks as he let me go to close and lock the door. Headboard? I asked when I got his attention.
We'll see,
he answered and took my glass. I grinned a lazy grin. He watched me, then growled a low growl. Once I heard that, still in my heels and dress from the wedding, I sashayed across the living room and up the stairs, knowing my husband's eyes were on my ass, even under my cardi. I eventually got headboard. I got a bunch of other stuff, too. It was magnificent. It would be, because I got it all from Hicks.
Hickson. Hicks stood by the mantel of his fireplace, looking at one of the many framed pictures resting there. The one that had his attention was the biggest of the lot. Greta was wearing a long-sleeved, drop-waist, filmy, ivory gown. The sleeves were see-through. There was an elegant drape at the neckline, not low, but wide, exposing her chest and collarbone all the way to the points of her shoulders. No beads, no pearls, no bling, just that. Her wedding dress. He was standing beside her, wearing a suit, his arm around her, but his other arm was around Corinne, who was pressed to his other side, and he had his head turned and bent, kissing his daughter's hair. Andy was at Greta's other side, but she didn't have her arm around him. She had one around Hicks, and her other hand was holding her bouquet of blue roses and white calla lilies. Andy was just standing close to his sister, but bent over the back of Mamie standing in front of him. A Mamie who'd been caught by the camera, laughing uncontrollably. Andy's arms wrapped around her in what looked like an embrace, but what memory served as him tickling her. Shaw stood next to Andy with his hand on Andy's shoulder. He was bent slightly with his own laughter toward his sister and a man he treated as a brother. Greta, however, was looking at the camera with a look on her beautiful face Hicks had seen only 3 times from her in his life. The first was the first time he saw her brother wrap his arms around her that day her mother was making a scene at Sunnydown. The second was when he looked back to her face after he'd slid her wedding ring on her finger during their wedding. And that picture was the last. Her expression was sublime. As it would be, she looked like she'd just hit heaven.
Ready,
she said from behind him, and he turned to see her coming in the room in a gorgeous tight dress, her usual heels on her feet. He suspected with one look at her that he looked like she did in their wedding photo. Then again, Hicks suspected most times he looked at his wife, he looked like that. She was rummaging through her bag, doing it talking.
We gotta go. With everyone coming in to see her, hair ran long and I didn't get back in enough time. We're running late.
He knew this. She didn't have to tell him. He didn't share that info. He walked her out the door, managed to keep Rocky from following them to the garage as he got her in his Bronco and they took off.
I talked with her, and Mamie's driving Andy back to Sunnydown after he's done at work. So we don't have to leave early.
Right, Hicks muttered. Andy had started about a month after Shaw left for the Marines at J&K's Electrics. He did cleanup and stock work. That was, he did that until he'd been caught talking to some customers about a TV, and he'd surprised the owners with his knowledge and enthusiasm. It surprised the owners further when the customers took Andy's recommendations and bought the expensive TV Andy recommended. That had earned him a polo shirt with the store name stitched on it and a salesperson's position. He had heavy supervision, but he even surprised Greta with the fact that he was a savant at all things with a plug. The owners used what made Andy special to their advantage. Andy didn't mind, so Greta didn't mind, which meant Hicks didn't mind. He'd had 3 seizures there and got flustered once, enough to bump into a display of thumb drives, knocking it over and making a mess, which flustered him even more. They'd just called Hicks. He'd come, calmed him down, took him home, and they said no more. They just called, "Hey," when Hicks walked him in the next day. He didn't remember a quarter of the sales he made, but he didn't have to remember what he'd done to sell more. It worked, and it might not have changed Andy, but it made him happy. Hicks drove them to the church, helped his wife out of the Bronco, and got her ass to a pew. It was when he was sitting next to her, staring at the front, when he felt her fingers curl around his. "Hey," she called. He turned to her. "You okay?" she asked. "Yeah," he lied. Her smile was soft, and her head tipped to the side. "Don't lie to me, Smokey," she said quietly. "Not sure I should be here," he told her. "She asked you as well as me."
"I'm a remot."
Greta squeezed his hand, got close, and whispered. "She asked you. It means something you're here. And you are you. You know that, so you're here." He swallowed. He then nodded. She gave him another soft smile, turned to face forward, but did it dropping her head to rest it on his shoulder. Only then did Hicks relax. He watched the groom come in with his groomsmen, then with Greta and the rest of the congregation. He twisted in his seat to watch the bridesmaids walk down the aisle. The wedding party was small. The attendance at the wedding wasn't. So when the wedding march started, there was a lot of noise of shuffling feet when they all stood to watch the bride walk in. Her kids walked in front of her. Her father was at her side. And after she arrived at the front and they all sat down, Hicks allowed his wife to cry for the 3rd time since they got together. The first was when he asked her to marry him. The second was while she was getting married to him. And that was the 3rd, and he hoped the last. Then they sat in a church and watched Faith Calloway standing with her kids, her hair perfect, her dress pretty, the smile on her face luminous, as she married a man named Owen. This has been an Audible Studios production of Complicated, written by Kristen Ashley, performed by Aaron Mallon and Lance Greenfield. Executive producer, Mike Charzuk. Copyright 2016 by Kristen Ashley. Production copyright 2017 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.